This is episode 29 of the Women in Depth podcast. The information found in this podcast is not a substitute for help from a licensed mental health professional. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Women in Depth podcast. I'm so excited to share today's conversation with you. I had the honor and privilege of interviewing Dr. Kim Hermanson on the topic of metaphor. She helps us understand what metaphor is, why it matters, and the gifts of metaphor, how metaphor can help us align with our inner wisdom, our intuition, how metaphor can help us get unstuck, whether it's a situation that we are grappling with, whether it's a creative project, and there's so much more. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the interview. Hi, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Kim Hermanson. Dr. Hermanson is a transformative coach, author, and shamanic intuitive who is known for her skill in quickly shifting people out of spiritual and psychological difficulties into a place of profound beauty, healing, and creative flow. A series of intense mystical experiences forcefully yanked her out of a conservative Midwest upbringing and profession as a corporate computer scientist and led her to develop Doorway Sessions. Kim works with creatives, pioneers, visionaries, and mystics to help them integrate their own experiences of non-ordinary reality and to connect with deep shamanic creative energies that urgently want to be expressed in our world. Kim currently serves as adjunct faculty at Pacifica Graduate Institute. She has taught at the University of California, Berkeley, the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, Sophia Center at Holy Names University, Meridian University, and Esalen Institute. She is the author of Getting Messy, A Guide to Taking Risks and Opening the Imagination, and Sky's the Limit, The Art of Nancy Dunlap Cadre. In addition to her own publications, she has co-authored several articles with Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, the author of Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience, and other books. Hi, Kim, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm really looking forward to our conversation today, which is about the power, the use, I think the gifts of metaphor. So before we jump in, could you just share how you were drawn into your work with metaphor?
Yeah, definitely. I really like to share my story. The work that I do with metaphor is completely, I guess I would call it embodied. Metaphor itself is embodied. It's an embodied way of knowing. But the work came to me through my own experiences. And so the only way for me to really explain what it is to share how I came to be doing this work. So the first thing is that I, as you shared in the bio, I was yanked out of a very conservative family. I mean, I grew up very normally, but it was very conservative family, very introverted, very into science, very practical. My father was a farmer. I myself have 2 degrees in computer science and was following just the family path. My sister was a physician. My father was an engineer. My brother's an engineer. My grandfather was an engineer. Just very, you know, so for me to be talking about non-ordinary ways of knowing is really not something that I would have ever expected that I would be doing. And so I was in my mid-20s. The primary story began when I was in my mid-20s. I was working for a large corporation in downtown Chicago as a computer scientist. And I took a weekend trip with my boyfriend to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We wanted to see the fall colors. And it was late at night. We were driving down the highway and a car crossed the center line and hit us head on. Wow. And after the crash, I tried to move my legs and they didn't move. And at that point, I knew my back was broken and I couldn't leave the vehicle. And, a traumatizing experience. It was out in the country. There was volunteer paramedics that took me to the local county hospital. The doctor was called in the middle of the night to see me and basically said, "You're in really bad shape. Of course, you have a spinal cord injury. It doesn't look good for you. Don't budge. Don't move at all." And he walked away. I think he was unhappy at being called in the middle of the night. And I had hours to wait for an air ambulance to take me to where I eventually ended up was the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. And so I'm laying there in the county hospital, and I was in a state of shock and trauma and fear, and I was scared. And the nurse walked over to me and whispered in my ear and told me to imagine that I was floating on a cloud. And so I closed my eyes and I just brought to mind a cloud and imagined that I was floating on it. And that shifted me into a place of more peace, of calm. It got me through the trauma. There was some other energy that came through in that very simple metaphoric image that shifted me.
That's amazing. Just that simple, like you said, that visualization of floating in a cloud.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very simple. And our minds want complicated. Our minds, like, I notice this when I do teleclasses, somebody will get an image of a waterfall and they'll be so disappointed. But it's like, it's not as, as we'll hopefully I'll be able to share in the interview today. It's not about the image. It's about the energy that the image is bringing. And the simpler, the better. And the images from the natural world, of course, are completely powerful and they're real. This is shamanic energy that comes through with metaphor. It's real energy. It's not of our psyches. It's another realm. It's another world that comes through. And I believe it's the deep feminine that wants to come through. And so that was the beginning of my path, but it wasn't the beginning of my work with metaphor because, of course, I was still involved in my computer science world at the time. And so, but the accident gave me, I did recover from the accident, by the way. And I can, that's another story in itself. I won't go into, but I had a lot of time to think about my life, of course, and realize how short it was. And so what I decided to do was what I wanted to do was study how adults learn in the world. And I was living in Chicago, so I decided I would attend the University of Chicago and get a PhD. And so I ended up doing that, and that's where I was able to have Mihai Csikszentmihalyi as my advisor, which was wonderful. And we wrote a few articles together that people could look up online if they're interested. And so I finished this fairly rigorous PhD program, totally in my left brain, not an embodied experience.
Yes, I have to agree with you on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are some programs out there, alternative program, PhD programs, that are really try to bring in a more embodied experience for their students. I have worked in those programs myself. But bless their hearts, University of Chicago is not there yet. and I had, I loved graduate school. I just absolutely adored it. I loved being in my thinking mind and writing and ideas. And it was rich and there were so many interesting people around. And so it was wonderful, but it was not an embodied experience. And metaphor is very much about being in the body. So I graduated with my PhD and I was completely fried. I couldn't look at a book. I couldn't look at the back of a cereal box. I had to move everything away. The words would just swim in front of my eyes and make me feel nauseous. And so I for lack of anything better, I'd moved out to Berkeley, California, and I was in the mood for doing the, wild, fun things that are available to do in Berkeley. And so I decided to go to the Berkeley Psychic Institute and just learn how to give readings for people. And I thought it was just a frilly thing to do. And what I noticed when I was giving the readings was that I wasn't necessarily predicting some sort of clear future. What I was doing was dropping down, and I was able to see whatever they were asking me about as a metaphoric image. So I would see them perhaps stuck in mud or unable to open a window, or something was over their head. And I could see it metaphorically as an image. And so that's, my readings were all metaphor. And so I just noticed that and tucked that away somewhere. But again, I grew up in a very traditional conservative family and went to a very traditional school. So the prospect of doing something strange like giving intuitive readings for my life path wasn't really in my cards for myself. So I moved on. I started teaching. I taught in the teacher credentialing program at UC Berkeley for a couple of years and a lot of other schools. And then about 10 years ago, and this is when my journey with metaphor really began. About 10 years ago, I was interviewing for a teaching position at a graduate school of psychology in the Bay Area. And the president of the school asked me, he looked at me and he said, well, rather than try to fit you into our program of classes, why don't you tell me what you would like to teach? And to my great surprise, Spirit spoke and said I'd be teaching a class on metaphor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. It's sometimes there's very blunt ways that Spirit works with you. And I've experienced that bluntness a few times. So the president of the school, you know, he just picked right up on it, like nothing out of the ordinary had happened. And he said, great, we'll call it the psychology of metaphor. And I walked out of there not knowing what I was going to do, because I didn't know anything about metaphor as an academic subject. And I also, I have to admit, I had never even taken a psychology class. I studied, when I was getting my PhD in adult learning, I was studying social change movements. I was interested in more adult, what was happening for adults in the world and how change happens. And so the whole notion of metaphor as a psychological topic and et cetera was foreign to me. But of course, because Spirit was speaking, the Spirit showed the books, and it really shifted my world to read some of this literature. Martin Foss is a philosopher who nobody knows about today, but wrote this amazing book called Metaphor and Symbol in Human Experience that was published in 1949 and had been out of print for years. And that was one of the books that sort of just dropped in my lap synchronistically, that I don't know how I would have found it, because it's not in print, but it showed up at a library right in front of my face. And you know, George Lakoff has done an amazing work on metaphor, of course. He's a linguist at University of California, Berkeley. So there's amazing literature to read on metaphor that for me to teach this class. And I taught this class and knew that there was some amazing energy that we couldn't see that was below the surface. I knew that from reading all these books and putting all these amazing people's, Gregory Bateson, that's another one of the authors who's written really profound things about metaphor and the biological world and how metaphor is the organizing, the glue of the natural world.
Wow, that's pretty profound, that metaphor is the organizing glue of the natural world. So it just makes sense that as individuals that would have an impact on us, because we are part of that. We're connected to that natural world. Just makes sense.
Exactly. And metaphor is our link to the world, to the earth world, it's the language of the earth. And the earliest humans didn't have verbal language skills. They communed with the trees and the woods and the waters and the sun. They could feel into the natural world around them. And babies also, they're not born with linguistic capacities. They are developed later. It's a later skill. What we have when we're born are bodies that feel into the world intuitively and physically. We get a sense of what is up, what is down, what is closed, what is open, what's a beginning and what's an ending. It's our native metaphor is the basis of our cognitive system and our native language. And there's been research done on this. That's not a new statement to say that. So yeah. So metaphor is amazing.
So for those who, maybe are not familiar with metaphor or hearing this for the first time, and they're not quite getting what we mean mm-hmm. when we say metaphor. Yeah. Could you just share maybe a few examples of what is metaphor?
Yeah. And so as far as like listeners in the world or listeners that are listening to this program, we make decisions sometimes. Some of us often use this way of knowing. Others of us don't. We might be more trained in the rational approach to life, but we'll make decisions based on, well, that feels better. I just have a gut sense, but I feel lighter and happier with this person or in this situation or doing this kind of work versus that kind of work. So our bodies are always tuning in an embodied way to things, even though it might not, it's more or less conscious for different people. But what happened for me with this work was that after I finished teaching that psychology of metaphor class, I had a very profound mystical experience where I was shown this other realm. And it was urgent. It was just exquisitely, amazingly pulsing beauty. And there's this urgency for me to see it and to do, it was just like, you have to see this kind of feeling to it. And I the only clue that I had was at the end of the mystical experience, the words third space were spoken. And so when I was bolted out of that vision, that mystical experience, back into my ordinary consciousness, there was some clue like, wow, they're trying to speak to me about this class that I just finished teaching, because I was using the word third space. It's a really, from a Jungian perspective,
right,
third
yeah.
space is the, you know,
it's the third, the
creative third,
yeah.
you know, when we're in a polarity or polarized situation. So I had that link, but I didn't have any other way of understanding what I was supposed to do with this communication from spirit. And so that's really the kernel of my work with metaphor, because metaphor allows us to tap into another realm. And it's that bridge, that connecting link. And so when I work with people, most of my clients are just going through ordinary life stuff. Most of them are working on some sort of creative endeavor or work project or whatever, but metaphor will show up. And in some of my clients, it's a very intense sort of shamanic ancient native energies that come through. So we'll just, in a session, I might just, images come spontaneously in the sessions. I don't guide them in any way or do a visualization or anything like that. Some sort of simple image will just show up and we'll go into an image and feel it and know it. And again, a lot of forms of imagery work, we're so used to being in our minds and trying to understand what some sort of image means. Like, for example, if we have a significant dream about a rainbow, we'll say, well, that rainbow means happy times, or it means there's going to be a pot of gold, or it means gay pride. So our minds will have all kinds of different associations with an image. But the way, since this metaphoric work is coming from another realm, the only way to know it is to embody it, to sit with it, to feel it. And so I'll give you an example of a client she was had finished her completed her master's degree and was working on developing her practice as a therapist. And what showed up in a session was an image of a gold bowl. And so, of course, we can look at the image of the gold bowl and look at its qualities, right? That would be a typical way, perhaps, of working with imagery and say, wow, the gold bowl is, it's feminine, it can hold things, it's very beautiful. But the way to know what, from the metaphoric realm, what this image wants to say is to really embody and be the gold bowl. And when we did that, when my client and I did that, when we stepped into being the gold bowl, what was so clear was how strong this gold bowl was. It was hail could fall down from the sky and slam into this gold bowl and it would not lose its shape. And I literally saw that. And so the vibrational shift that she needed was strength, was knowing that she could hold her shape no matter what was happening in her external world, that she was strong enough that there was nothing that was going to, you know, move her out of alignment with her purpose here. And she needed, I won't go into details about this particular client, but she needed that kind of strength in her life because she had other factors that were pushing her in different directions. So the work with metaphor, again, I really try to emphasize that it's not about the image, that it's about the energy that wants to come through with the image.
Well, that is, you know, that just gave me chills just listening to you describe that. And I was thinking again to your, you know, at the beginning where you shared the image of floating on a cloud and you could feel that, like that's something even as I was sitting with that.
Yeah.
And I can see how powerful and how, and that shift is different, you know, from coming from a place of, okay, what are your fears about getting your private practice going? What are, you know, what, mm-hmm. you know, what are your goals? What it really moves you, like you said, from, you know, that logical part of your brain into a felt experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And that's what we need in order to have real change. I have one client who he's brilliant. He was, when he was younger, he developed some medical thing that helped to heal an illness. And so he's a brilliant man, came from a brilliant father. He was a physician, his father was. He's read every single book there was to read. And he said to me, you know, I've read every book there is to read, but I can't live my life. I can't get my life to change. At the time he was going through a very traumatic divorce that he didn't want. And so what we did was the image that came was a deep pool of water, very calm, very healing. And again, you know, our mind can just dismiss it and just say, you know, he whatever, you know, and have all kinds of other things that it feels like it needs. But our body needs the energetic shift. That's what it needs. It needs attunement with that deeper realm of creative energies that are always there for us.
So when you work with your clients and you step into the image or you are the image, how do you do that? How does that feel? What does it look like for the person who is, you know, experiencing this?
This is a question that I have been thinking about for so long because it's something that I intuitively know how to do given that this work that I do is embodied. It's not, so I don't have a technique that I can teach. A friend of mine is a coach and she doesn't do sort of traditional coaching. She just follows the heat, follows the energy.
Yeah,
she said, people ask me how to do that. And it's like, I don't know. I just know there's where the heat is. And so it's the same way with me, with my work. It's like, I just know somebody will bring in a dream and have several images in it. And there'll be one image that's alive and the other one's not, they don't take us anywhere, they're not that portal to that deep creative. And so I don't know exactly how to teach that, I have to admit, because it's just something that I know. I was thinking about it and there's different ways that I could suggest to your listeners that would get somewhat of a sense on their own for how they could work with imagery. And one is that the creative process takes us in. This is the deep creative. It's the way that life, our life force wants to move, both individually and collectively. There's a deeper creative that wants to happen, a deeper creative movement. And we in a culture, just like we have dismissed the feminine, we have dismissed the creative. It's just frou-frou. It won't earn us any money. We need to be practical. We're all trying to make a living, etc., whatever. We dismiss it. This is where our power lies, is in the whatever creative movement or creative nudgings you're getting, that's going to take you to that deeper creative realm in your own life. I have one client who I dearly love, again, another coach and therapist, and she keeps getting this nudge for a novel, and she's finally now getting into it. And the novel is going to be powerful. I know it is, because it's coming from this deep place that she can't say no to, but it doesn't seem to make any sense.
Right.
So, you know, our rational minds want us to keep going on this linear path, and there's this other realm that's saying, no, 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 listen to me. So, yeah.
You know, I was also thinking when you were sharing that, you know, as you said, our bodies are tuning into an embodied way of knowing things, and metaphor allows us to tap into another realm. It's a connecting link. Is this the same as, or is it similar to intuition?
I would say that it is our intuitive way of knowing. And I don't know. I know that there's people that have written books on intuition, so I don't know that they have a different concept of what intuition is. But to me, intuition is something like we know something, but we can't explain how we know it. And so there's something else that's speaking. Our bodies are speaking. There's something else that has a wisdom that's not available to our conscious mind. When I was going through the car accident aftermath, I was in the hospital, and the doctors told me I had less than 5% chance of walking again at the Mayo Clinic. Very prestigious place, very prestigious doctors. And I was open to everything that they had to say. I wanted to hear everything. I wanted to learn everything. But I knew on a deeper level that I was going to be okay, that I was going to make it through, that it was going to be okay. I don't know how I knew that, but I just knew it. And
It's amazing, because I am just thinking about what you shared about the natural world is really the source of our metaphors, and that our minds want complicated. And it's interesting, because you would think that connecting with your knowing and trusting that would be almost, it makes sense and it seems like the easier way to go. But we continue to, I guess, to analyze, to rationalize, to research, to, like you said, to make things complicated. And I think what happens is we start viewing the complicated path as actually the path that makes sense and is easier, and start viewing the trusting oneself and going within as the more complicated path, or the path of, I guess, less legitimacy, or
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, and it's less legitimate in our culture. I mean, who would have thought that me growing up in the situation I did and with the background I did would be doing something that seems so far out and far-fetched today? It doesn't, and there's no way. I mean, there was many years that I wasn't able to explain to people what I was doing. I had to just not say anything, because I couldn't, I didn't have armed and ready some sort of rational path for my life. And so it is hard to trust it. And I do have clients that tell me, wow, this is so powerful. You know, what's coming up in the session is so hard. It's so powerful. And it's hard for me to trust it. How do I trust it? How do I trust this?
Right.
And so, you know, I just am glad to be doing this interview today, you know, because I believe that we all need to start having these conversations. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had mystical experiences that they haven't been able to figure out what to do with, or to have that they've had other ways of knowing that have shown up, but they've just dismissed it because it doesn't seem to make sense with their life or with any thinking of how one should lead a life. But the truth is that deeper energy that wants to come in, which I believe is the deep feminine, that is I believe, our ultimate way that our culture is moving. And so I think all of us are moving into more of an embodied way of knowing. And of course, you know, depth psychology as a field is, I believe, you know, leading the way in that. And all the other forms of people doing various kinds of more embodied work in the world.
You know, I absolutely agree with you about, you know, the need for more of these conversations, more permission for mm-hmm. these experiences, space, safe containers, spaces that can allow these experiences to be. And, you know, as a therapist, it's interesting, you know, there's a quote by Jung, and I'm not going to say it exactly the way it's, you know, it's written, but he said that, you know, every person who ends up in a therapist's office deep down knows what they need to do. They know the direction to take. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because even as I sit with clients, they know what shifts need to happen. They know what information is coming up from below that's trying to get their attention. But there's such a resistance, a struggle mm-hmm. with taking it seriously, accepting it, and just watching that, where asking them, you know, to check in with their bodies. What do you feel? You know, if you get still and quiet, what are you hearing? And then, well, but I went on Google and this is what it said.
You know? Right, exactly.
Or I read this book and this is what it said. And it's such a, I sometimes feel like, you know, it's continually helping them to lead them back to themselves, to their wellspring of deep, deep information and insight and wisdom that they can trust and won't lead them astray. But, you know, it's interesting to see. And even as a therapist and having colleagues who are, you know, working on establishing or building their practices, or friends and colleagues who have creative projects, that same thing where they have a sense or a feeling that they're being led to, but this isn't how they say you're supposed to build a business. Mm-hmm. You know, this yep. isn't how you're supposed to write a book.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or
yeah.
this, is, you know, or yeah. And so I think it's also difficult because of the messages from the external world that get in the way of, I guess, listening to and taking this part of ourselves seriously.
Yeah. And I believe, I mean, my PhD is in education, and I've always been interested in how we learn and know in life. And I think that part of it is that we haven't acknowledged and had this other way of learning and knowing. So when we attend school, we're schooled in this particular, very rational, methodical, being in control, having an assignment, being able to complete the assignment and then get a degree, whatever. So, you know, we're taught, and it feels good, right? It feels good to have a goal that we can put a step-by-step plan
yeah.
to achieving.
Mm-hmm.
But this work is the creative. So we're stepping into an unknown place. What do we do then? What do we do when we, so, I mean, I remember when I, because I, my first occupation after I finished my PhD was in teaching in a teacher credentialing program. And I remember a story of a teacher walking into a room and there were no books, and it was her first day, and I think it was a math class or something like that. Well, what do you do? Right?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. It's like, what do we do with life is ultimately and fundamentally bigger than us. It just is. We can't control it. There's a fellow who wrote a book, I think it's called Learning as a Way of Being, something about strategies for living in a world of permanent whitewater. He called it whitewater. So, you know, and he was a business guy, and it's all about these, Peter Vail was the name, all about how when you lead a business, there's all these things coming at you, and you have to figure out how to handle it all. And there isn't some sort of rational way to go about doing that. So really, I think that our culture and people need a way of knowing that is legitimate. I guess I would use the word legitimate, and you used it before, that it doesn't, you know, feel legitimate to go this way. But if metaphor is a solid, it's a research, it's been researched as, and it, and I, George Lakoff has done amazing work on the subject. So I think there's a way of knowing here that will help us be able to navigate and trust in something deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this is making me think of a recent conversation I had with Dr. Anders Beyer. He was on the podcast speaking about the shadow of technology. And one of the things he shared was how this overuse and focus on technology actually leads us away from our connection with the natural world. Mm. And if you don't have a connection with something, you can't have a relationship with it.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, what you're saying really ties into that as well about we have been trained or schooled or we've learned to turn away from the natural world and to trust the world of information, the world of evidence-based, research-based approaches. And I'm not dismissing that. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm trying to say is that we tend not to value something that we can't explain, that we can't put a finger on, where we can't say, okay, these are the steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then these are the outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is exactly it. It's, we can't measure it.
Right.
We can't explain it rationally. And so why should we trust it? Why should we trust it?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, our capacities of how we make sense of the world and how we learn in the world need to be opened up. And what you were saying also with that, the connection with the natural world and having a relationship with it, I also want to put in a little bit about images themselves, because so many people do work with imagery work, and that I said before that I can't really help people understand what's an alive image and what isn't. But what I can say is that what I notice is that sometimes what we tend to do with images is the same thing that we tend to do with the rest of our lives. We'll be separate from it and we're just trying to figure it out rather than not presuming we know what it is and just allowing ourselves to sit with it and just be with it. Linda Berry, the cartoonist, she wrote in one of her books about sit in a room and stare at an object and then wait until it starts changing shape, you know? And so I don't do that with my clients, but I would suggest for people that they could, we are being spoken to by this other realm in our dreams, in our waking life, in our body sense. We can sit with something and just feel that connection with it without having our minds sort of step in and say, well, this means that. So yeah, and metaphor again is very much connected with Earth. It brings us back to the natural world.
You know, and I don't know, this might be reaching, so just tell me what you think of this. Uh-huh. Just this thought just came to me that I would say that in general, people are very anxious. I know that's a very common experience. I see in my practice with my loved ones, myself, friends, and I almost feel like, you know, this anxiety, you know, anxiety really is difficulty being in a space of unknown. You want clarity, you want structure, you want things to make sense, which, you know, that is something that we also need in our lives. But a lot of times people want to know what's going to happen, when is this going to end, what do I do, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to stay in that space because it's hard to not know. And so I could almost see how anxiety is really connected to this process of helping us to become more comfortable with this third realm of not knowing, that this space that can be so uncomfortable is actually a space, if we allow it, that can really help us connect with a deeper wisdom, our creativity. You mentioned, you know, when we communicated before this conversation about our genius. And so I think that's just interesting, that connection between wanting things clarified and mapped out versus dropping into this unknown space of ambiguity and unknown areas.
And the thing that'll bring us through that is feeling it vibrationally in our bodies, because that's where the calm and the peace comes from. As you know, I was in the hospital and I'm looking for a prognosis of, okay, probably wheelchair situation for me. That cloud shifted me. And so I just had the thought that I could offer your listeners a something that they could do when they feel that anxiety cropping up, or maybe a sense of distrust, or just being scared that they don't know what's going to happen. I mean, in our world right now, it's very chaotic. And so those kinds of fears are probably going through a lot of people at some level. And that would be just closing the eyes. And I'm just going to do that as I speak it, so that maybe the listeners can as well. Just closing the eyes, taking a couple of deep breaths, letting yourself settle into the center of yourself, wherever that seems to be. You're just going into your center. And for the deep creative, one of the images that reveals itself all the time is it's fluid, it moves, it's watery. So let's just imagine ourselves as water right now. It could be a body of water like an ocean or a pool of water or a stream. Any form of water is okay. Just imagine yourself as water. And then notice what might want rest. It might just be the deep pool that wants to rest, or it might want to move in a certain direction. If so, notice how it wants to move. Notice if it wants to change shape. So we're working just very simply with a very simple image, but it has a feeling sense to it. It has a vibrational quality to it. And you can trust that vibrational quality that's showing up for you in whatever form. That's what I would offer. It's very simple.
Wow, that was beautiful. I was doing this exercise with you, and for me, it was like floating in the ocean, but the water was not moving very much. And I don't know how, but I was floating in it. So what came to me was the rest.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Just wanting to be held in the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing about this is that isn't just something that you made up right now. That's real. It's real. It's really a realm that showed up for you to give you that and wants you to have that feeling of rest.
That's powerful. Thank you for doing that, Kim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. My pleasure.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I was, of course, doing my logical research preparing for this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you mentioned the use of fairy tales to unlock your inner wisdom. And this intrigued me because I remember when I was at Pacifica, I took a class with Lionel Corbett. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he mentioned was, thinking back to your childhood, what were your favorite fairy tales and this having meaning for you? And that always intrigued me. And I wanted to just ask you about that and see if you could share a little bit more about fairy tales and how that plays into metaphor.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Fairy tales are amazing. You know, it's interesting. Before I had that experience of walking into the job interview and Spirit said the word metaphor, for years I had actually been writing little fairy tales for myself, for just my own process. And I don't remember when I started doing that, but whenever I was unsure what was happening with me, I would just sit down and I would write the words once upon a time, a long time ago, and I would just let the words write themselves. And it was always very profound, because fairy tales in that sense are reflecting back to you whatever's going on underneath the surface that you can't quite put words to, and they put words to it for you. That's what metaphor does. It puts words. That's why another reason metaphor is so amazing is that it puts words to things that we can't explain any other way. And so when you write a fairy tale, and when I work with people, I always say, start with those words, once upon a time, a long time ago, because those words themselves take you into that other place, that deep creative, and just see what wants to be shared. And it's a wonderful way of just doing a process of your own. Again, ways to relieve the anxiety, anything that will take us into that deeper place helps to shift us into another space. So.
Would you be able to share an example of a little fairy tale, whether it's one of your own or another one that you've maybe had someone else write?
Yeah, definitely. I actually have a YouTube video right now on fairy tales. So if you go to YouTube and you put Kim Hermanson in, you'll find my YouTube video. And the fairy tale that I share in that was one, again, I just wrote it up briefly right before I did the video, and it was, I closed my eyes and saw myself on a path. And so I wrote something like, I'm walking down this path, but there's something else that's calling my attention. I could feel it. So when I work with metaphor again, or with fairy tales, it's again, I'm sort of closing my eyes and merging into this image feeling place, and whatever images are leading tend to lead my fairy tale. So yeah.
And then you know, we talked about the natural images. Does it mean something, or what does it mean if you feel like you're attracted to certain symbols?
Well, what I would suggest for people that way, I do have a handout for the listeners, and there's two symbols that show up, metaphoric images that show up frequently. Actually, the square is the one that shows up the most frequently for whatever reason right now with people. The circle often also shows up. Those are very simple metaphoric images that come through. And again, it's the feeling quality, the strength of the square, and they can go to your website to see that handout. But if I was telling, you know, asking the question of, well, somebody has an image that seems particularly meaningful, I would say that there's probably a quality or an energetic, there's something energetic with that image that's important for them, whether it's the eagle or the tree or deep rootedness. So go to the energetic feeling sense of it as much as you can. Try to embody it. And I think I mentioned before, using a creative process will help you get to that feeling sense of it, whether it's dancing the image or writing the image, I am the deep-rooted tree, or I am the eagle, whatever, drawing it, painting it. So you want to get to an embodied place with the image, and the creative takes us to that. But I would say that there's probably some sort of energetic quality to it. And also, I mean, there's images. I have a book that I hope is going to be coming out this year on metaphor. And one of the pieces in the book are something that I call like key images. Or when we're born, we don't have our first few years of life are very shaping for us and in our development. And we'll see things in the world around us that are very important. So I grew up in Iowa. My father was a farmer. And growing things and soil is just really etched into my bones, my psychology. And so I have other clients, they might have grown up on the ocean. I have a client who, when she was growing up, they had a country house, and it was a very ramshackle house, and she loved that ramshackle house. She didn't really like the city house that was so proper. And so there's different ways that images that might have stayed with us through our whole life are actually guiding images. They're important for us in who we end up being and who we become.
I love that description, Kim, because I think, you know, I'm just thinking of images I've always been drawn to, or have I've always been aware of that I felt attracted to them, or there was just some kind of compelling quality. And when you describe looking for that, or I guess being still and paying attention to the energetic feeling or quality or that vibration, that makes so much sense. Because, you know, there's like, why am I attracted to this? Why do I look for this? Or why when this is in the background, I immediately pick up on this. You know, it's just interesting.
Yeah. The energetic feeling sense is really where the power of metaphoric images come from. And I don't think that, you know, all images carry that. I think some do, and those are the ones that are very potent, and they're usually of the earth in some way.
And so I guess on that note, Kim, maybe if you could share a little bit about how you work, the way that, through your doorway sessions and how you support your clients, and maybe the best way that clients can get, potential listeners or clients could get in touch with you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. My website is kimhermanson.com, and they could also send me an email at kim.hermanson@gmail.com. I work with anyone. The metaphoric realm can show up, and it can help with anything, because basically what we're doing is we're getting into that deep wisdom, the deep body, the deep creative in the sessions. I would love to work with people who have had nudgings of something else that they don't trust, because again, there's a planetary shift that's happening. And I think this work with metaphor is helping open up that way of being able to learn from our non-ordinary experiences and that part of us that's wanting something from us, but we're afraid to trust it. And I also wanted to say that I'm offering a discounted rate for the people on the call. So my sessions are normally $165, but I'm offering a rate of $100. So that'd be $65 off if you want a session, a doorway session, to experience that with me.
And I love the way that, I love the name that you've chosen for these sessions, a doorway session. I just think that that's such a beautiful image, for capturing this moving from one space to another.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Kim, all of the information you shared, the links to your website, also the links to the handout that you created for our listeners, which is on the sacred power of simple images, all of that will be available in the show notes.
Great.
Thank you so much, Kim, for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation. I learned so much, and I definitely had an embodied experience while doing all this technology. So that was great.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah. I mean, who would have thought that I would be the one talking about being in the body? I was the one that most needed to be in the body in my life. So
I just think it's an interesting shift to go from the computer science, such a concrete, analytical, technical space, to the work that you're doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation with Kim Hermanson. What stood out for me is that when working with metaphoric images, it's not so much about the image, but about the energetic feeling, the felt sense of that image. What also stood out for me is how metaphor allows us to tap into another realm. It's a connecting link to our creativity, to our intuition, to healing, to releasing ourselves and unlocking areas of struggle. What also stood out for me is how metaphor is our body's way of tuning into a deeper way of knowing, an embodied way of knowing things. And that metaphor is actually our native language, that it is the language of the natural world. For show notes to today's episode and for links to the information provided, please visit www.lourdesfiato.com/women-in-depth. Again, thank you so much for taking time to listen, and see you next time.